up, but he knows who just ran into him. Picked off by Pacioretty. He'll send that to Gallagher. We'll talk a little bit about Eichel when we get a chance. He scores! Gallagher from the right wing, a harmless-looking shot. He beats Lehner right along the ice, and the Canadians take a 1-0 lead.
It's starting to get physical here. I like it.
25!
And you hear someone yell, yes, 25. That's how many seconds left. Kane dashing after it, and he is hammered, knocked off balance by Yemlin, and he is hurt. Kane went very heavily into the inboards, and he is writhing in pain. Oh, and a big hit by Yemlin as he sent Larson spinning and falling just inside the Canadiens' blue line. At the side of the net, it's put off the iron, whacking away at it, and for Carr, scores! Daniel Carr jammed it in. Let's see. Picked off by Patcher. Galchenyuk being watched by McCabe. His pass back to Weber. Shoots it. Scores! Weber from the blue line through a crowd. And it's 3-1. I think they're probably taking an extra look at it here.
Scored by number 11, Brendan Gallagher.
And Yemlin with another big hit. That time he knocks down Molson. Well, Yemlin has brought his heavy hitting game tonight.
Tonight's third star. Tonight's winning goaltender for Montreal, Al Montoya. Tonight's second star for Montreal, Shea Weber. And tonight's first star with two goals, Montreal's Brendan Gallagher.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub. With six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
While he was watching another Stanley Cup banner go up in Pittsburgh, that was going down in Buffalo. Welcome back. It's hour number three, Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, and Pierre Maguire back home. How you doing?
Very well, Mitch. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. First things first, we were all trying to figure out. We knew Evander Kane was hurt badly because...
Oh, boy, that was ugly.
He was in real distress. Three cracked ribs, and he's out for weeks.
I would say that I'm glad there's no internal damage on that hit. In Buffalo, like a lot of rinks around the league, the boards, especially when you get near the bottom of the boards, there's not a lot of give. Some teams in the league, there's a little bit more give. In Buffalo, there's not a lot of give. Montreal doesn't have a lot of give. But that wasn't pretty. I'm just glad he doesn't more severely hurt in terms of potential paralysis, really. That was nasty.
Alexi Yemlin, as you heard, Pierre.
He's physical. I watched good portions of the game. I mean, he played a physical game. He was a robust player for them, no question.
And he was playing alongside a barely 18-year-old rookie making his NHL debut. I was really impressed because I, on the surface, I'm not crazy about that pairing. I don't know how much we're going to see it, but he took care of business.
I don't want to burst your bubble. Those were the Buffalo Sabres without Jack Eichel, and those were the Buffalo Sabres without mostly Evander Kane. So let's just keep it in perspective. Very good first start. Really good job by Al Montoya. A lot of good things from Shea Weber. Obviously, the leadership from Brendan Gallagher. That game was a little tighter than you thought, though, because if Torrey Mitchell doesn't score when he scores in the second period, I don't know. I mean, that's a lot tighter than you think.
But today, they did what they had to do last night.
That's all.
It
was a good dress rehearsal.
And what I was, you know, I think Ottawa would be a bigger test for the kid, Sergachev, but I don't know if he's going to play because Jeff Petrie's ready to play, and he was practicing as the seventh defenseman. And to that, and I was looking forward to seeing him against Pittsburgh. You know, if he's here, you assume he's going to play. Yesterday, Mark Bergevin on with the three of us here on Melnick in the afternoon, one of the things we threw at him is something you alluded to, the fact that Mark Bergevin was a teenager when he broke into the NHL, had a long career. Larry Carrière was barely 20 when he started his NHL career. Mark Bergevin also threw in Jean-Jacques Daigneault, was a teenager when he started his career, and on Sergachev.
It's a fine line, obviously. We have to watch him closely, but we have time. And right now, tonight's his first game. I'm really excited for him. There's also the other window, which is 41 games. That also comes into play. But at the end of the day, I believe we'll make the right decision with Mikhail.
It is a fine line, as we discussed yesterday, Pierre. What do you think if the kid plays in Buffalo as he did last night and then is scratched tomorrow night against Ottawa? Like,
that doesn't bother me. It's about whether he's retaining in practice. That's what we talked about, and that's why I didn't bring up the assistant coach, J.J. Daigneault. That's why I brought up Larry and why I brought up Mark, because they're sitting and evaluating. and it's easier to evaluate from up high than it is from ice level, especially when you're coaching. You're not just worried about one player, you're worried about a bunch, but when you're evaluating, you can evaluate the whole group. It's really different, and you can really focus in. So I think that if he plays like he played last night, which was solid, and he keeps getting better in practice and they have a proper work schedule for him, then I think there's nothing wrong with him staying the year. But if they don't have a plan, if they do not, like if you were to ask him, what is your plan? Is it a game here and then a day off and then a game there and then a day off? Or is it three in a row? Or is it one and then two off? You know, like, they should have a plan. They should have a plan drawn up. Now, obviously, you can't legislate against injury for some of the other players, but they should have a plan or should have had a plan drawn up for him.
Sergachev, Mikhail deserve to start the season in Montreal, and we have the abilities to keep him. The part that's getting will be tougher is a kid like that. You cannot send him to the American Hockey League. So once he goes to junior, it's almost impossible to recall. So that's why it gets a little tricky.
All right, and
that's exactly right. That's the conundrum to the rule. But I think they do, because I think they're pretty enlightened. I think they probably have a plan for him.
Somebody texted us just before you joined us. Does Pierre trust J.J. Daniel with the development of Sergachev?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think there's anybody on that staff I wouldn't trust. But one of the things that I think needs to be evaluated as the year goes along is the growth of the player, and then you'll find out a little bit more, because right now Canadians have an outside of Nathan Beaulieu, who I didn't think they did a particularly good job with. Over the previous time, I think that they learned their lessons from that, and that's why I think they deserve another chance, all of them, as a staff, to try to make the players better at the NHL level.
You mentioned the caveats for the Sabres last night, the injury situations, etc., but the Canadians still got a win. Is that a good teaching situation for a coach? You come away with the 2 points, division rival on the road, but there's still a lot to work on.
You should have a captive audience, and that's where Shea Weber and Brendan Gallagher and Plekanec, older players that have been around Markov, they can really help. And your point is well taken, Rod, in terms of division opponent, rivalry-type game. Usually playing in Buffalo is pretty nasty, especially on opening night. So I think there was a lot they could take out of that that was extremely positive. I will be totally frank with you, and I don't know what's been said on your station. There was only one part of that game I didn't like, and it was at the end.
Andrew Shaw.
Yeah.
We talk about it on the Friday scrum in its entirety, replayed between 6 and 7. I didn't understand why he did it with 2 seconds to go, especially he's kind of
Johan Larson, too. Please.
And he's kind of a marked guy, right? And the NHL, actually, what Andrew Shaw revealed today when it was announced that he won't get suspended, but he has a conversation coming up with Stefan Kindel. And so you can imagine what the tone of that conversation will be. Right?
They gave him a break in preseason. Everybody now knows that. Because if you look at what happened after he got a break and Gudas got a break, nobody else got breaks, and then Gudas didn't get a break either. And I personally think they're giving him a break here. If I were Mark Bergevin, I wouldn't leave this to the coach. That guy would be talking with me tonight in Ottawa. We'd be having a very significant chat. Because you can't have him doing that, because now he is teetering. That's why I didn't like it. He's an important part of the team, and that's not what a leader does. Leaders don't do that.
And played a very strong game last night.
He did, and then look what he did at the end.
Yeah. Well, like I was saying, and you'll hear it between 6 and 7, and Knuckles and Sean were of the opinion that what he did was typical Andrew Shaw. It's sending a message out.
To Johan Larson?
Well, yeah.
No, you want to send a message. There are other guys on Buffalo's team, like Nicolas Deslauriers, who's a really important physical player, or Hudson Fashing. But to Johan Larson, that's not a message.
To be honest with you, what I knew, I just lived it. I mean, once you put a team together, if you lose a key player for a long time, these guys are impossible to replace. And the key player we lost was in a position was probably the most important position in hockey. So I saw what happened. So I didn't learn. I just lived it.
I asked Mark Bergevin yesterday, Pierre, what he learned going through the kind of year that he went through last year, and you just heard that. What else do you really think he learned?
The importance of team building, the importance of depth at different positions, the importance of when you draft a player to play a certain position, you play him in that position. I think there's a lot that he learned. Importance of communication with coaching staff and millennial players. I think he learned a lot about that. Mistakes made in the off season. You can't be taking monster gambles on players, especially players that have had questionable character. I think they learned a lot. I do, and I think he's a smart guy. I think he learned a lot in terms of the art of team building.
And on his coach?
Because he's a very good coach. He's got a great feel for the game. I think his success last year, based on what happened, and Tublik and Scotty Bowman couldn't have coached a team where goaltending was subpar. I don't care. It's a tough business, but when your goal average is not very good, it's hard to coach bad goaltending or average goaltending. I still believe today Mike is a very good coach. I mean, prior last year, I think he's done very well as far as a coach in the NHL.
Now,
it's impossible to win in the league without good goaltending. I don't care how good a coach you are. It's impossible to win in the league without good goaltending. You can make your team better. You can make them compete night to night. You can do a lot of things, but you can't make them better because you're not getting saves. You got to have a goalie. If you don't have a goalie, you can't be a good coach.
So when Carey went down last year for the second time, Pierre, went down for good, that was November 25th, the Canadiens' team save percentage was .925.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the way, the team save percentage, and that was mostly Condon, a bit of Scrivens, the team save percentage was .895 the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm. That's part of it. And the other part of it, and I think they know it as a group, the power play was stinky. So you combine bad power play with a team that doesn't score a lot 5-on-5 and marginal goaltending, you get what you got. So that speaks to a lot of different things. And I think they took it turn to try to address it. Why do you think Kirk Muller's there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, remember, Mitch, in the summer or in the spring when we were talking about Kirk Muller, everybody's all hot and bothered and giddy, and I said, just slow down. Don't build this guy up too much. He's got to work with some of the same players in terms of the power play. And the power play wasn't real good last night. I know they only had two chances, but the power play wasn't real good last night.
They will score tomorrow night in Ottawa on the power play. I don't know if they're going to win the game, but I just, you know, I've got these feelings lately.
Okay. Feelings are good, but I'm just trying to manage expectation. I think it's really important. It's not like they just flipped the switch.
Right.
And that's what people need to understand. They've made some good additions, and they've done some really good things, and I really believe they are, if Carey comes back and plays the way he's capable of, they have a real good chance to be in a real good position to be in the playoffs and do some damage. There's some finishing things that have to take place here with this group.
Guy Boucher, after the Austin Matthews show, which ended up with a win thanks to the overtime goal by Kyle Turris, said, clearly we got a lot of work to do. These guys are still trying to figure out this system of mine. So where do you think he takes this club, and what kind of team are they facing tomorrow night, the Canadiens in Ottawa?
They're facing a team that's really learning how to play for their coach. I think that one of the things I really like about Guy, he's a communicator. He surrounded himself with very good coaches. Mark Crawford is an excellent coach. Robbie Cookson is an excellent coach. Marty Raymond is an excellent coach. He's done a really good job with that. I think some of the players will really respond to him in a positive way. Ottawa really needed to fix their special teams, everything, penalty kill, power play, everything. They still need to be better in their own zone. I think they can be. I think Guy's putting them in the right position. I really do.
27% for Phil Kessel. It is a win for the Penguins on opening night.
That's where Pierre was last night. The 48th greatest Leaf of all time, Phil Kessel, winning in a shootout. What kind of game did we miss?
Solid, physical, rivalry-type game. Tommy Wilson and Tommy Sestino got into a fight, and you could see it was going to happen right away. I said it before the face-off. There was a lot of hitting, a lot of pace, very good goaltending. Marc-Andre Fleury was outstanding in goal for Pittsburgh. He was a difference maker. Braden Holtby was equally good. I thought that both teams had more than enough chances to win in regulation. The only negative part to the whole night, I thought, was that Washington couldn't find a way to get ahead in terms of really establish themselves as a top team. Now, Pittsburgh, I thought, did a great job reeling the game in when they fell behind 1-0. I thought Pittsburgh did a really good job.
How about Brad Marchand? Huh? coming out of the World Cup.
There's a couple of parts of this story. Now, I don't know how much you guys have talked about it, but I went back to my hotel room and watched that whole game last night because when I was looking at the in-house scoreboard, I was going, wow, that's good for Tortorella and Columbus. You know, Boston's going to do a pretty good job, I think, as the year goes along, and they got some of their players back. And then I saw the score, and I obviously saw how it ended up, so I went back and watched it in my room. And David Backes,
yep.
Let me take you back to the World Cup.
Big presence there, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember what happened to David Backes in the World Cup? He got benched.
By John Tortorella.
Correct. David Backes played on the line with Brad Marchand, and Brad Marchand obviously had a huge night.
5 points for those who may have missed
David,
it.
Yeah, he 5 points. But if you look at the way the game was played, and you look at David Pastrnak and how he elevated playing on that line, that's the influence of David Backes, what he's going to have on the Bruins. That guy made a huge difference last night.
Yeah, we were talking, of course, watching what was going down in Buffalo, how important it is immediately, right, to have an impact in a win for your new team, first game expectations, and Weber did it, and Shaw did it, and Lekkonen didn't score almost.
He got play well, though.
He did. He was killing penalties.
Solid. He looked like a professional player.
I thought he was the best player on that line for the Canadiens last night. And in Boston, what you're saying about David Backes is that was you couldn't have asked more if you're a Bruins fan than what you saw last night.
No, and when you have their team, the way it's going to be slotted, it's going to be Krejci, Bergeron, then Backes. David Backes isn't going to have to haul those kind of minutes. And when he's a fresh player, and I talked to the St. Louis guys about this the other night when I had them in Chicago, when Backes doesn't have to haul big, big minutes, and he was close, I believe, just going off the top of my head, I think he was close to 20 minutes last night. If he's playing maybe closer to 16 or 15, Rod could look it up. I think he was close to 20 last night. When he's got those reduced minutes, oh, man, he's going to be a force. He's still got a lot of hockey left in him. He's going to be a force.
And I don't say it to be flippant, but the Tortorella watch is on in Columbus.
Well, I'm not prepared to say that, but I can tell you this. Brandon Dubinsky is somebody that's really important to that team. Brandon Dubinsky has to be an A player just because they don't have Ryan Johansson there. Cam Atkinson's got to be an A player. You know what I think of Cam.
Yep.
Those guys were an A players last night. Nick Foligno's got to be an A player. He was not an A player. And when you look at it, Brandon Dubinsky was -5 in that game. That's one stat that stands out. Just, again, off the top of my head, he was -5 in that game. That can't happen.
As we take another look at it, it must be a shoulder, you would think. So if he is, or a wrist, maybe he's grabbing his hand. This is not a team that can afford to lose the production of Kane, who is still down on the ice and, as I said, writhing. He's in a lot of discomfort right now.
And again, Dan Roberts and Sergio Mimesso in the booth for us last night.
I'm bringing Dan, and I love listening to Dan and Sergio, and I do it a lot, to an NBC sports symposium. Never play doctor from the booth. Don't talk about shoulder. Just say he's hurt.
It's tough. And as again, if you missed the beginning of this, 3 cracked ribs. He's gone for weeks. So, Pierre, Buffalo is one of those teams before the season started, right? You're looking to make significant progress. Yeah. There's a lot of excitement. They lose Eichel for not only weeks, but who knows how effective he'll be.
Probably because, 2 months. Probably 2 months.
Yeah, and now Kane for weeks. They didn't have Okposo, although I think he's coming back. They didn't have Kulikov last night. So all of a sudden, it just feels like the darkness has returned to Buffalo.
That's why I brought it up to you before. Just you have to measure it, and I think the Canadiens did what they needed to do. I loved what you said about that before. But I also know, and I think Mark Bergevin probably knows, there's still steps that need to be remedied if they're going to beat some of the top teams in the league. And I think it really starts with power play. But I like the physical pushback. I loved Alexi Emelin. I thought Brendan's leadership was fantastic. I think Galchenyuk can go to another level. Lekkonen was good. There was good stuff, but I just, against a better team, let's see how it shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Pittsburgh Penguins 2016 Stanley Cup Championship banner. And it's permanent resting place high atop the PPG Paints Arena. This officially concludes the Penguins 2016 NHL Championship season.
Does that take you back, Pierre, a little bit when you see that?
There's a bunch of emotional moments. Mario and ownership there decided to redo all the banners, starting from the 91 banner all the way through to now 2016, so they all look the same. So hats off to the organization for doing that. I think the new banners look phenomenal, better than the banners that we won when it was the old Patrick division that we were playing in. So Mario and ownership there deserves a ton of credit. That's number one. Number two, watching the banner go up. When I go to Pittsburgh, the only things I really look at are some of the great pictures from some of the teams that I was involved with. I don't really look up much because I got to be focused on the ice. I looked up when the banner was being raised, and I saw our two banners from 91 and 92 that I was fortunate enough to be a part of, and you get emotional. You think about all the players that played for you. You think about all the coaches you worked with. You think about the trainers that you worked with. One of our trainers, John Welday, passed away this summer. He was a really hard-working, industrious guy, and so you think about him. You think about, you know, the relationship I had with Joey Mullen or Mario or Gordy Roberts or Larry Murphy, Ronnie Francis, Kevin Steele, you know, all those people. So you get emotional. But the one thing that I thought really stood out was the way Mike Condon, who was the first player announced, skated on the ice, stood, and he was almost as if he was in awe watching the whole thing. I took a picture of him, and I sent it to the old prep school that he went to, because that's where my son goes, and I said, please send this to his father, because his son is standing there at center ice watching the banner go up, and it was really an emotional moment. It was really cool.
That's cool of you to do that, Pierre.
I did it because I got to tell you, Mario came over. I was working, and he's like, he gives me the finger to come over. So I come over out of my box, and he says, thanks. And he shakes my hand and gives me a hug, and he says, way to go. I'm looking at his ring, and I'm going, holy man, that's a huge ring.
They keep getting bigger and bigger.
The small one that we got from 91, he started laughing.
It's amazing. They keep getting bigger and bigger. That's
my gosh, it's so big. I don't know if TV did it justice. It's gigantic. It's tasteful. Don't get me wrong. It's beautiful. But I don't think you can wear it.
No, you can't even wear it. If you can't wear a ring, then don't design it that way. Seriously. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know when this started. It's like bigger is better, really? Okay.
Well, not always.
Mark Recchi tweeted his, four rings that he's got, right?
Right.
And each of them, bigger, 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 gigantic.
Gigantic is what I would say about this one.